Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Lisa. How are you?
I am doing great. I cannot believe we are within 2 weeks of Boston again. Every year, like, you know, we think it's going to take so long to get here. Every year when Boston is over, we think, oh, we have to wait a whole year till we get back there. And all of a sudden it's here again and went by fast.
Well, although I'm not training for Boston, I feel like I'm definitely training by proxy between you and all of our runners running it and coaching them. So I do feel like in this weird way that I'm going through the Boston training cycle, even though I'm not. And I have to say it's flown by for me, but you're actually doing more of the running. How has it been for you?
It's been fine, but honestly, like I think both of our focus is more on like our runners getting ready for Boston and that whole, like the whole, like you said, the kind of the whole training cycle. So mine's fine. I just like haven't paid too much attention to it and just kind of going through the motions of getting ready. Did my last long run a couple weeks ago now. And you know, just getting excited for Boston and trying not to check the weather, which is always my, like, I know not to do it, but you know, it's like that tempting, like, oh, the 15-day forecast is up. One year, I always say every year what I want to do, and I haven't done it. I wish I had done it for many years, was record what the forecast was like 10 days out, 9 days out, 8 days out, and see like how often it's even close to what it actually is, just to prove to myself that it's never accurate. But yeah, So just getting excited. And we've been doing a lot of prep calls for runners getting ready, not only for Boston, but for other marathons, but a lot of Boston runners. We've talked to you this week doing prep calls. We've started doing marathon race prep calls, and it's been going really great. And it's been so fun to meet a lot of runners that are going to be in Boston and talk to them and help get them ready for Boston. And I know I've talked to everyone from somebody who's doing it for the first time. So really going through all the kind of nitty gritty logistics and what you need to know specifically about Boston to somebody who's doing it for the seventh time, who doesn't need the nitty gritty logistics, but really, you know, was hoping for some like more mental prep and more, just some more, kind of a strategy prep than actually Boston logistics. So it's just really been fun. And we are still doing those calls. If anybody wants to hop on a call with us for a marathon prep call for Boston or for any other spring race for Boston, we'll be doing those calls through April 10th. And because then we're getting ready to head up to Boston, and we want to make sure everyone has enough lead time to put into action some of the advice that we give and the preparation that we suggest. So we're still doing those. You can email us at julieandlisa@runfartherandfaster.com to get on our calendar in the next week or so to do a call.
Yeah. So our coaching calls are, of course, separate from our regular coaching. We have many, many runners heading up to Boston. We're so excited to see them race, and we've been coaching them all along. These are calls specifically for those who are not currently being coached by us, but just want a call. For some runners, it's, as you mentioned, some mental strategies. Others, it's reassurance. Can you take a look at my training and let me know what you think I can do on race day based on my numbers? And for others, it's, hey, I've been injured and I want to run. I just wondered if you had any suggestions for me in terms of how to approach this race. So we're happy to talk to anyone. We just ask that you schedule it rather soon so we can get you on our calendar, as Lisa mentioned, because we will be heading up to Boston on Friday, April 12th. And of course, once we get to Boston, we are super excited. We will be hosting two events. The first is on Sunday morning, April 14th at 9 a.m. We'll be hosting our annual shakeout run at Brewer Fountain in Boston Common. That's where we've been in the past years. And we posted about that on our Facebook page as well as on Instagram. If you don't have the something handy to write down the location and the details, we always give away swag at our shakeout run and connect with runners and listeners, and it's always so much fun. So please join us. We will be there rain or shine, and we can't wait to connect with so many of you. We've already met and connect with so many of you that we haven't met yet. And then our second event on the same day, Sunday, April 14th, is of course our panel, which we will be hosting on the live stage at the expo. There's only one live stage, so it won't be hard to find. That's at 2 p.m. on Sunday. And we are so thrilled to be co-hosting with our friend Cherie Turner, who hosts the Women's Running Stories podcast. And we will be hosting a panel comprised of three amazing women, and they will be Alisa Harvey, Brianna Bomer, and Kelly Bruno. And each of these women has an outstanding story that they will share on how they have trained and broken barriers in their training and racing and what running means to them. And we just cannot wait to showcase their talents on and off the roads. So that's what will be happening with us on Boston Weekend. So just one more recap, 9 a.m. on Sunday, meet us at the Shakeout. 2 p.m. on Sunday, meet us for the panel on the live stage at the expo.
And you don't have to do the Shakeout run. If you don't want to run, you don't have to do the Shakeout run. Or if you're doing a different run on your own or a different Shakeout run, come by, say hi to us. We just like to meet everybody. Like you said, we're going to give out swag. So first come, first serve for that. So make sure you swing by and at least come say hi to us.
For sure. And then Lisa, I just want to compliment you on your training. I wanted to note this and just take a step back. You mentioned how you had a long run a couple weeks ago and you're kind of laid back about your training right now. I think that's a really smart approach, because if anyone's been listening to the podcast over the past year, you've had like a lot of really strong races over the fall. And then of course you ran a very strong half marathon in early January at the Maccabi Games. And you've just done a lot of racing. And I love that for this training cycle, rather than thinking of it as a fresh start where you're starting all over again, you're thinking of all of this body of work as just like one seamless sort of continuum of training. And I think that's going to serve you so well at Boston, because you're not going into Boston overtrained, and you recognize that all of the mileage that you've accumulated in the fall, late fall and winter all leads up to Boston, and you don't have to start like a new training cycle to train for Boston. You can kind of pick up from where you left off in the fall. And I just think that's a really smart approach. So for folks listening that also are in a position where maybe your training, it doesn't look like it always has, it doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. There are so many different ways to approach Boston. So if you're looking back on your training right now and thinking about all of the runs you missed, how about instead you think about all of the runs that you did and all of the training that you and the body of work that you developed over the last few months, instead of thinking about what you missed? Because honestly, you can't do anything about the runs you missed. You can only look forward at this point. So speaking of looking forward, the biggest tip we have for this week and next week is please, please remember that less is more. So when you're deciding whether to run or get a couple of extra minutes of sleep, choose sleep. When you're deciding whether to stay up a little later to get that last bit of work done or to go to sleep a little bit earlier so you can wake up and do your run refreshed, choose sleep. See a theme? Sleep. Sleep is really important. The best way to absorb all of the work that you've been doing over the past few months is to sleep. And also, don't forget about your fueling. Just because you aren't running as much doesn't mean you don't need to fuel as much. So really think about the quality of food that you're consuming. Make sure you're getting in enough carbohydrates, protein, good fats, all the things that are going to help support your muscles, your bones, and help you absorb all the work that you've been doing. You don't want to go into the race underfueled. And underfueled also means eating foods that aren't going to serve you as well. So certainly we are so supportive of carb loading. We want you to carb load. We want you to eat all the things you need to eat. We love graham crackers. We love bagels, Pop-Tarts, whatever works for you for carb loading. But I'm talking about over the next few weeks, think about the quality of your food. Think about the quantity of your food. Make sure you're fueling your body. Your body is going to be put under a lot of stress in a couple of weeks, and you want to do everything you can to optimize it so that you go into the race not only fresh from taper, but also fresh because you've fed your body well and you've slept well.
Yeah, I think during taper, a lot of people tend to think that they need to cut back on what they're eating because they're not exercising as much. And that's actually totally the opposite of what you want to do now, stocking our muscle glycogen stores and fueling our bodies and making sure that we're well fueled for race day. So that is not the time to do that right now. So agreed.
Absolutely.
Good points. Yep.
Yeah. So we're really excited to welcome our guest today, Our guest today is Dr. Benita Stevens. And Dr. Stevens was selected to run the Boston Marathon with Team Bevins. And that is a team in which members are selected annually to honor the accomplishments and legacy of our past podcast guest and panel guest, the amazing Marilyn Bevins, who is the first U.S.-born African-American woman to run a sub-3-hour marathon and medal at the Boston Marathon, among many of her other accomplishments. Marilyn is such a pioneer, and she will be back at Boston this year. And Team Bevins will be introduced after our panel that we just mentioned on Sunday. And we are so excited that Dr. Stevens was selected to run on Team Bevins, and she certainly deserves this honor. So Dr. Benita Stevens is the founder of Chow Bella Medical Center and Spa. It's a gynecology center in Newnan, Georgia, that specializes in care from conception to menopause. She obtained her Bachelor of Science in Exercise and Sports Science from the University of Georgia and her medical degree from Morehouse School of Medicine. She's not only a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist and a fellow of the Congress of Obstetrics and Gynecology and the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology, she's also board-certified in obesity medicine and a member of the Obesity Medicine Association and a member of, and this is key, the North American Menopause Society. So she's very, very knowledgeable, not only in all things running, but all things menopause. So we talked to Dr. Stevens a lot about both. To date, speaking of her running, she has competed in 26 marathons and competed in the inaugural Abbott World Marathon Majors WANDA Age Group World Championships in London in 2021. She has also became a six-star finisher in 2023 and set a new Guinness World Record for the most six-star finishers at a single marathon, which took place in Tokyo. Dr. Stevens has also completed the Boston Marathon for six consecutive years from 2018 to 2023, and she will be competing her seventh Boston Marathon this year in 2024. How about that for a bio?
How did she find time to train for marathons? Did you ask for that? Like, I'm wondering.
I did.
That's a lot.
She's amazing. We talked a lot about how she fits in her running. She talked a lot about her training. And then we talked a lot about care for women athletes. And she had a lot to say about that. It was really great to have this conversation with her. You know, there are a lot of us that right now are at a time in our lives, we're in perimenopause or menopause, and a lot of our athletes are going through that. And having someone who is also around our same age, who also is running at a high level and doing all the things, talk about what she personally is experiencing and how she cares for her patients was really a tremendous resource and a great conversation. And I was saying to you, Lisa, offline that I hope we can collaborate on some things with her in the future. She's just outstanding. And it was really a great conversation and really enjoyed learning from Dr. Stevens and look forward to having our listeners learn from her as well.
Great. And we'll get to see her in Boston.
Yeah, I can't wait to meet her.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to meet her, she's going to be at our panel discussion. Team Bevins will, there'll be a presentation for Team Bevins following right after our panel. So she will be there.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
That's
so
exciting.
Lisa, I hope you have a great second to last week of your training. I hope everything goes well, and we'll talk about it next week, but I look forward to seeing you on Sunday at the Cherry Blossom 10-mile run.
Me too. Bye.
Bye, Lisa. Dr. Benita Stevens, welcome to the Run Farther and Faster podcast. As I was just saying offline, gosh, I wish we would have had you on sooner. I'm so excited to talk with you today and just so thrilled that you're taking the time to talk with me and for our listeners to hear all of your guidance, because you are truly like the perfect guest. You are a runner, and you also are a gynecologist who specializes in menopausal women. And as an athlete yourself, I just can't think of a better combination. In fact, I wish I lived in your town so you could be my doctor.
Oh, well, so, thank you. I really appreciate you asking me to join the podcast. You know, this is what I do every day, all day, and I'm just excited to talk about it. I find myself having these conversations with women over and over again, and the reality is hitting, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is me now, this is me. So everything that I'm saying, I'm like, oh, I got to modify because I'm not 35 anymore. So As much as I enjoy helping people find solutions, I've also been on this path myself to look and see, okay, what are the things I need to do now since I'm getting older, because I still want to be able to run fast.
So. Exactly. I think you have a very captive audience. And so before we get started and talk about all things running and menopause, I first would love for you to introduce yourself to our listeners and share a little bit about your professional background and your running background.
Okay. Well, again, I'm Dr. Benita Stevens. I'm a board certified obstetrician and gynecologist, and I'm also board certified in obesity medicine. I entered into this whole framework because I've always been interested in sports. And so one of the things I would realize is that whenever I was talking to my patients about the things that they needed to do to help with, say, abnormal bleeding or PCOS or whatever they were coming in for the day, I needed to talk to them about diet and exercise. So that kind of led me down the track of looking at obesity medicine and seeing how I could better serve my patients from that standpoint. But these days, I spend a lot of time talking about perimenopause and menopause. I still deliver a few babies here and there. I'm kind of transitioning out of that arena just because it's tough. It's stressful. It's a lot of work. It's hard to be in the hospital all the time, but then also be in the office without being pulled out. So just kind of trying to find my way to find a place where I'm able to be more effective, but not pulled in so many directions. I have a little French bulldog named Hershey. I know my friends are going to join me about it because Hershey is always the center of attention. But if you know me, you know Hershey. And that's about it. I spend most of my days running and working and just trying to enjoy life.
Can you talk a little bit about your Chow Bella Clinic and what you do there and where it's located?
Okay, so my practice is called Chow Bella Medical Center and Spa. Chow Bella means hello, beautiful. And at Chow Bella, we strive to really enhance your beauty, your life, and vitality. We have the privilege of seeing women through many lifespans and ages. So, you know, sometimes the young lady will come when she's 16 to 18 and she's just starting to see if she needs birth control or a pap smear. And then I've had the pleasure of maybe delivering a baby or two down the road. And then as they start to age, we're talking about, oh, okay, now I'm having these joint pains and now I'm starting to have hot flashes. And it's funny because I have two very good friends that I went to college with and I was able to deliver both of their babies and our conversations have changed. So it's like we went from birth to now, okay, perimenopause. So at Chow Bella, we do basic gynecology and we also do aesthetics and some other vaginal rejuvenation type of procedures.
So Dr. Stevens, if someone doesn't live near you in Georgia and they're looking for a physician who does what you do, how can they go about finding someone who has your expertise?
Well, in particular, if they're looking at menopause, they can go to the Menopause Society website. It used to be called North American Menopause Society, but you can go to the website and you can look on the link and find a provider. If they're looking for a gynecologist, our group is called the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, so you can look on there. But you just want to make sure that you find somebody who is reputable, that it, you know, kind of knows what they're doing and not just, you know, starting out for the first time trying to figure out what's going on. If you're looking for me, you know, you can go to our website. It's www.chowbellamed.com. And we're also on Instagram as Dr. Chow Bella.
I think you're on TikTok too, right?
I am on TikTok. I'm trying.
I hear you. I can't get into it, but I really appreciate your videos. I feel like, and we'll get into it a little bit more. I do want to talk about your running, but I just want to say that a lot of my friends and I have talked about, it's very hard to find a physician who really is knowledgeable and will spend the time talking with patients about menopause. It's kind of ridiculous because it's something that every woman goes through. And it's ideally the majority of our life is spent in that time because many women hit menopause in their mid to late 40s or perimenopause, even in their early 40s. And women live ideally for a very long time. In fact, women often outlive men, yet why do you think it is that menopause is sometimes perceived as an afterthought. And relevant to my question, why is it hard to find physicians who will spend the time not only talking about it, but troubleshooting and treating the symptoms?
You know, honestly, I think part of it is just where we are in medicine these days. It has really turned into a space where we're having to kind of just go through the patients really quickly. Most offices, you know, the average provider is seeing anywhere from 30 to 40 patients a day, and they're crammed into spots. And so when you're coming in, it's hard to get through everything. It's okay, I'm having my PAP, but I also want to talk about my hormones. I also want to talk about my weight. And so I feel like a lot of providers are just finding that they're having difficulty trying to balance those conversations. At my practice, we really do try to make sure that we can spend the time. I try to let some of the basic non-high-risk type of gynecology be done by the nurse practitioner so that I can spend more time with some of the things that require a little bit more time to go over. You know, we spend most of that time after age 50, and we call menopause at starting at age 51 to 52, but actually people start noticing changes around age 35. So you start seeing changes with some of your hormone levels that are starting to decline, or if they don't decline, they're going up and down, up and down. So that makes it worse. You're feeling crazy and you're like, what's wrong with me today? I feel good today. I don't feel good, because you're seeing these different changes in the hormones. But finally, around age 51 or 52, you get that abrupt decline where you have the loss of total estrogen, testosterone, and progesterone. And that's when you really start to notice, hey, I'm in menopause now. But for those of us who plan to live long, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, you could be 80 or 90 years old and about 40 years away from menopause and still experiencing some of these symptoms. Yeah. So I think that's why it's a little bit of a challenge for the average provider to take the time, but I'm blessed that we have the ability in my office because we focus on it. So we try to make sure that the people in the community know that if they're specifically dealing with menopausal issues, then we're the place to come to.
Absolutely. I can tell by just talking with you briefly so far, how much care and consideration you put into your practice to tailor in spite of all of the challenges that all physicians face in the way our system is structured, our medical care system. So before we talk a little bit more about troubleshooting symptoms, which I want to get back to, I do want to focus on your running, because in addition to being an accomplished professional, you are also an accomplished runner. So what got you started running, and what your running looked like then and what it looks like now?
Oh, wow. So I started running way back in the day in high school. I ran the 800 and the 4x4, and those were my two events. And, you know, once I got out of high school, I was like, oh, I don't think I want to do this anymore. But just like most people, as I went through undergrad, medical school, I looked up one day and I had started to gain a few pounds. And so I was like, okay, I know where to get rid of this. And so I started back running. Little did I know that there was a whole nother life with running. I was used to just track and field. And a friend invited me out to run a 5K one weekend. And once I showed up at the 5K, it just kind of lit all of that competitiveness back up in me. And then I realized, oh, there's 5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons, marathons. And it just took out from then. So I literally started with the 5K, and then each race was the next race. So I think it's been almost 24 years or so now since I've started back running. And it has definitely been a lifesaver with helping to balance out the stress that comes along with my daily lifestyle outside of running.
Ask, how old are you?
So I'm 45. I'll be 46 in June.
Oh, you're young. Okay. So you started running. Yeah. So you started running around 21 years old, or returning to running. Yeah. So when you were running then, it was to relieve stress, and you mentioned to lose weight, but then it slowly morphed into, or quickly morphed into, more of just, you enjoyed running in the competition itself. When did you transition into more competitive running and eventually marathons? And what did that look like initially? And what does your running look like now?
Oh, first of all, I just realized, did I say 20 years? I probably meant like around 14 years, because I think it was around 2013, 14 when I started. I was like, no, 21, I was still struggling.
got it.
So it was during that time. But the question was about how did I get into marathoning?
So what did you're running then? You were doing it for stress relief and you started getting into more competitions, but then you transitioned to marathon. So what did it initially look like when you started marathoning, and what does it look like today?
Oh, initially I had no idea what I was doing. I was just out there running. I would go outside and depending on how I felt, I would just go run. It didn't matter the pace. It really didn't matter the distance. I would have some idea of how long I would want to be out there, but I would just be running. And then I found a plan. I think the first running plan I looked at was on Nike. And so I tried to follow the Nike marathon plan. I signed up for a marathon. I had a very tough day at the first marathon. It happened to be the Miami marathon, and it was very, very hot.
That is a really tough first marathon. Not only is it hot, you're not acclimated because it's in January, but those bridges are really hard too.
Yes, I had a very harsh reality. But after that marathon, I was like, okay, I know that there's much more in me than this. So I signed up for some more shortly after. And then I finally was able to get my time under 4 hours. And once that became a reality, I was like, oh, people keep talking about this Boston Marathon. And so I started looking into Boston, and then the goals were set. It was like, okay, I have to run the Boston Marathon. And I just started doing training plans, listening to some of my friends in the different running groups. And I ended up my first Boston being 2018, which is probably one of the most horrendous Bostons that I've ever ran.
Okay. All right. First of all, before we discuss that, because I definitely want to discuss 2018, what do you think was the biggest thing you did in your training to go from trying to get under 4 to qualifying for Boston?
Well, at the time, I started just running more mileage because I didn't really know what I was doing. So I got more structured with the long runs and starting to do some speed work and some hill training. Once I found out about Boston, I looked on the site and I saw their marathon training plan. And I just tried to follow it. It's a tough plan, but I followed it to the best of my ability. And once I got more consistent and focused, I was able to qualify.
So you qualified and your reward was the tundra torrential downpour flood, otherwise known as 2018. So talk a little bit about that and what that experience was like for you that year.
Oh my God. Let's just say that I felt like it's good to be a little bit ignorant of the process, because these days I don't wear as many clothes as I wore that day to run in, because I'm usually going to be hot, particularly with these hot flashes and stuff. But I had on a lot of clothes because I didn't like to be cold. So I actually think that was very beneficial for me, because I had on a t-shirt and I had on a running jacket that was a rain jacket. I had my hat on, and so I was covered. So I didn't really feel all the stress from the very low temperatures in 2018 like some of the runners did. I think the biggest thing that I felt that day was I worked so hard to be here. There's no way that I'm not going to finish this marathon. And so it was like, okay, I'm just going to put my head down. We're going to start this race and we're going to stop once we hit the finish line. And that's what happened.
And unbelievably, after that experience, you actually decided to return. And this year will be your sixth consecutive Boston.
Seventh, if you count the virtual.
Yeah. Okay. Seventh. Congratulations. So between 2018, which I would imagine, while special that it was your first, was probably the hardest, I would imagine. What other race year was a special Boston for you, or was it all of them?
So yeah, Boston is always special. This is like Disney World for me, but 2019 was a very, very good race for me. I came back with the plan of, okay, 2018 was tough, but let's see what I could do. And I think to date, 2019 was my fastest Boston. I think it was somewhere around 331, 332. But I just had a very solid race and I felt good. The next one that was tough was 2021 because I ran London October the 3rd, I think. And then Boston was like 7 or 8 days later. So that was tough, but we got it done. And then in 2022, unfortunately, I had some issues where I was starting to experience some heart irregularities. And so 2022 was like a comeback year. And it was more of just proving that I could do this again and just building my confidence of being able to run a marathon. So I've had some very special years, I would say, with most of the Boston marathons.
And now that you've run it six times or seven, including the virtual, what tips do you have for those who are heading to Boston and running it this year?
Don't waste all your energy on the days before the race. I think that's what really has made the difference on some of my races, because I feel like I've come into the race very trained, ready, and then on race day, I'm tired. I'm just exhausted because the days before I've walked a half marathon for like 2 or 3 days back to back. So I would say, you know, just be very careful with what you're doing the days before, strategically planning where you're going to go and how much time you're going to spend there, how much time you're going to spend on your feet. And then probably the other thing that I have to remind myself of this year is not to start out too fast. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard not to get caught up in the excitement before the marathon starts. Of course, the days leading up. And Lisa and I have talked about this a lot. In fact, we just did an episode last week talking about a few mistakes that runners tend to make in Boston. And that was like number one is just running the marathon before the marathon. Of course, starting out too fast. But you're now an expert, which is really cool. So what keeps you motivated year after year in your training? And that's another question I have, because a lot of our runners, definitely, especially around this time, right as we're about to taper, but we're not super close yet, you feel a little burnout. So what keeps you motivated?
You honestly, I think lately it's been just trying to conquer the marathon. It's like I'll go out, I'll do a race, I have certain goals. And if I don't accomplish those goals, it's like, okay, we're back to square one. What can I do this time to make it better? And I think because I know the body and I can kind of see how different things affect the body, it's somewhat fun all at the same time to manipulate certain things to see how it's gonna affect my running, you know, how sleep is gonna play a role, how strength training is gonna play a role. Okay, what about now? I'm starting to eat more fruits and vegetables and not just all the protein. How is that helping with my recovery? So I have fun playing around with things and seeing what kind of effect it's going to have and just how different my next marathon can be.
I love that. It sounds like you approach your running from a place of curiosity versus from a place of pressure.
Somewhat. There is some pressure there. There is some pressure.
And speaking of pressure, what do you do when you feel nervous? And because you're a physician and because you're so aware of your body, what are some things you do to calm yourself down prior to the marathon when you're about to toe the start line?
So I run with music. I know everybody don't, but I do like to run with music. So right before the race, I'm kind of to myself. I'm doing my warm up. I'm just kind of more zoned in to what's going on. So I get very focused. It's kind of like how I am when I'm in the operating room. It's like when it's time to do business, I'm ready to do business, and I kind of block everything else out and focus on where we're going. And so that is kind of my safe place because I'm trying to limit all the other distractions and how they play a role in how I feel.
So a little bit of a meditative moment before you're about to start.
Yes.
And what do you do for fueling in training and racing? And has that changed since you first started marathoning?
Yeah, actually it has. So I went from being the person who felt like they couldn't hardly eat anything or drink anything, because that was the old track and field days. I hardly ate anything. I can't even, it's hard to, for me to even believe that I could run the races that I did with the little few that I had. But once I got into marathoning, I realized, oh, you got to fuel. You have to eat something. So my first nutrition that I used was UCAN. I had very good results with UCAN. And I liked the stability of my blood sugar. But like most people, Kipchoge came around and I heard about Martin. And so I kind of transitioned over to Martin. And I really like the effect of Martin. And I think it's more the caffeinated ones that I enjoy most, because I am a coffee drinker. So the Martin just kind of helps me to get in that zone. And more recently, I've started using some of the HVM in ketones to help with the focus and the clarity. I like the fact of burning the ketones at certain points during the race and not just having to rely heavily on the carb sources.
Can you talk a little bit about the ketones and how you practice with those and when you take those?
So I usually take them about an hour or so before the race starts. And then sometimes I'll take a second dose somewhere in the middle. The ketones for me have just, one of the biggest things that I notice is it keeps my heart rate low. And that was something that I struggled with a lot, because I was having these irregular rhythms for whatever reason. And I was having spikes, and I was spiking up to the 170s, 180s. And honestly, one time I even got into the 200s, unfortunately. But when I take the ketones, they're able to keep my heart rate very low, and it helps me not to have to work as hard. So they have been a great help. But it's just using different energy systems. So that most athletes are more in the carb burning system. But as we know, once you get to mile 20, you only have so much left. So being able to utilize both of those systems have been pretty good for me.
And do you use salt tabs as well, because Morton doesn't have electrolytes in it?
Yes, I do. I will either use the salt tabs, or sometimes I will mix some of the like LMNT, which mm-hmm. is a hydration drink. I will put that in my water in a handheld that I carry, just so I can have it, because I sweat a lot.
Yeah. And then, because you're a woman, and I like asking our women athletes this, where do you store your nutrition when you race?
All places. They have been everywhere. Yes, I have put them in the bra. But these days, I try to buy running shorts. They have the pockets on the side, so I can just stuff them in the pockets, and it makes it easier. And I have a system. I know the caffeinated Martin is on the left side, and the non-caffeinated are on the right.
I hear you. I keep the caffeinated ones in the bra, and then the other ones separate, just so I don't confuse them 100%. So this year in particular, it's going to be hard for you to not participate in everything, because of course you have had the honor of being selected to run on Team Bevins. Yeah. Can you explain to our listeners what that is and what that means to you?
Oh my God. It's like, honestly, I came into this Boston thinking, oh, okay, this is the seventh one. I'm just going to chill, just have a good time, not make a big deal out of it. But when the opportunity was presented for Team Bevins, it kind of changed my whole focus, because I just started to reflect on all the years. And if it finally felt like, okay, here's a little bit of recognition for all the years of hard work. I think when you're that kind of middle of the pack runner, you're not super fast, but you're not necessarily super slow. You're just caught in the middle. And sometimes I think you're just kind of drowned out. So for me, this was like, this will probably be the closest thing to my Olympic trials or Olympic debut. And so to just have the opportunity to have some of the VIP treatment and recognition will be cool. And also, hopefully, to inspire other women to go out and start running marathons if they haven't, but to show them that they can do it and that they can continue to do it. And even as you're aging, you can make modifications and still have a long life of running.
Absolutely. How did you feel when you found out that you were receiving this honor?
Oh, I was excited. I was ecstatic. I was bouncing off the walls. So It was a shock because I really didn't think that I would be picked. I didn't even know that they were picking people for it. So to be honored was a complete surprise for me.
I think it's amazing. And I do love how you put that because you are an age grouper. You are absolutely at the top in your age group, but there are so many age groups in Boston and yeah. The fact that you're receiving this honor and also the fact that Team Bevins elevates women of color who aren't in the Boston Marathon space as they should be and have younger women can see you and say, oh, I can do that. And you're such a role model in so many ways. And I just think it's amazing that you were picked for this team. And of course, Marilyn Bevins, have you had the chance to meet her before?
I have not. So I'm looking forward to meeting her in a few weeks.
Yeah. I mean, she's amazing. We had the opportunity to interview her last year on a panel and the year before. And not only is, of course, she the first U.S. born African-American woman to run a sub-3-hour marathon and medal at the Boston Marathon, but she has just an outstanding story herself, as do you, and all of the trailblazing things she's done outside of running that has impacted the athletic community are worth honoring as well. So I'm very excited that you're on the team and it's so well-deserved, and I'm excited to meet you in person. So when you go to the events and when you are about to run Boston this year with all the training behind you, what do you think you'll be thinking about during this race?
Well, you know, this race, I just want to run a solid race. I've really been working on controlling my paces, not being so anxious about it. And so I'm really going to think about control, starting off easy, not running too fast, not getting too excited. I've done a lot of hill training, so I've decided that I'm not going to let the hills conquer me this time. We're going to have a love-hate relationship, but I'm going to win this time. So I'm thinking about that, but I'm also thinking about kind of everything that I've been through over the last years and trying to use that to fuel me for the strength to get through it. Because the people that know me know 2022 was tough. It was hard. It's somewhat of a defeated state when, as a physician, you start having some things happen with you medically and you don't know what's going on. And when I started having the issues with my heart, the first thing I was thinking is how can you be someone who's promoting health, exercising, trying to eat right, taking supplements, doing all the things, but yet still have an issue like this? Because, you know, we're thinking about heart disease and that, and you're thinking these are things that you can change based off of your lifestyle. And at the time, I wasn't sure exactly what was going on. So it kind of took a toll on me, and it made me have to consider the fact that I may not be able to run again. You know, what if I do have one of these hereditary conditions that could make me end up with sudden cardiac death syndrome? And so I wouldn't be able to run. So once I went through all the testing and got the green light and found out that everything was okay, you know, I promised myself and God that I wouldn't take running for granted, and that I would, the times when I'm tempted to just complain and say that I don't want to do this or do that, that I would remember this time when I couldn't run and try to use that to fuel me and continue to go to accomplish bigger and greater things.
That's really beautiful. Did you feel frustrated during your journey when you were trying to troubleshoot, and what advice do you have for those who are dealing with something where they're trying to figure out their own solutions to a health issue?
Oh yeah, I was very frustrated because I was doing all type of stuff, and I was sitting on the couch and I was still spiking. I wasn't, you know, I could just get up and go get something out of the refrigerator, and I could feel everything going on, in particular because I'm so in tune with my body. So it was tough, and I was the patient, and I was dealing with physicians, and like how we talked about with women not feeling like no one's listening to them. And so I was having to find other providers that I felt like were hearing me. And so I found a cardiologist who was very active in with marathoners and in the running community and with sports in general. And I found somebody that would listen and that would pay attention, and he helped me troubleshoot some things. And I just, you know, kind of walked through the steps. So I would say, if you are a patient out there and you feel like you're not being heard by your provider, to get a second opinion. You know, as a provider, I shouldn't be offended if you want to talk to somebody else. We should be able to work together to help find the solution for you, because it's your body and it's your health. And this is a partnership between us. And so if you feel like something is wrong, and if you feel like we just didn't hear you or we missed something, then go talk to someone else. Continue to search online and do your research to see if there are some other answers out there. But I also just want to caution people about being the doctor too, because there's a lot of stuff out there, but there's a lot of things that really don't conform to the book. And if it was that simple, that it was just like the book said, then most people would not be in the shape that they're in, because we would just do the right thing and everybody would be healthy. So, you know, do give your provider some credit for the years of training that we've had to go through to actually help learn how to practice medicine.
It's a great point. I think it's so easy to use Dr. Google or social media groups where everybody's an expert because of their own specific health journey. And it's really easy to go down that rabbit hole and kind of convince yourself that you're the exception, where physicians obviously are the experts. But great advice to find one that works for you. And I like that you mentioned that you found a cardiologist who's also an athlete, because that's really key too, as someone who understands what running means to you and is going to do everything they can to ensure that you can continue your sport. Have you had to change anything since 2022, or did everything just kind of regulate on its own?
So I was already doing some low heart rate training, but I really focused on keeping the heart rate low when I'm doing easy runs. And then when I'm doing speed work, then it's speed work. I've made sure that I'm hydrated. I made sure that the electrolytes are in the appropriate range. It's just all the little things that I think we take for granted, because when you're young, you just don't have to think about it. But when you, as you start to age, it does start making a difference. So those things have been very helpful. And I actually even got a heart rate monitor that I wear all the time. I used to wear the one that would actually do EKGs while you're running. But now, since things have been so much stabler, I can use the regular Garmin chest strap.
Great advice. Thank you. So speaking of running, as we get older and things change, can you talk a little bit about generally what suggestions you have for women who are in peri or already in full menopause and wanting to maintain their endurance sport?
You know, the big thing with us is that you really got to consider that you're going to lose muscle. And so whereas you could get away with maybe not doing as much strength training, I really would suggest that as you age, you really make that a focus to do the strength training, to do some of the cross training, to supplement, because you really want to build those muscles back up. I recommend eating a lot of protein to help with that, because, you know, oftentimes we're so caught up on the carbs to fuel for the run that we don't always focus on the recovery. And it's necessary as you age to make sure that you're doing the recovery. You got to get the sleep. You got to get the protein. You got to make sure that you're staying off of your feet, all of those different things. And then if you are having perimenopausal and menopausal symptoms, then go see your provider and talk to them and see what options are out there. You know, something so simple that I was thinking about, it's funny. I'm out here, I'm running, and I think about things that I talk to my patients about. And I'm like, yeah, that happened to me. And I never put that together. But, you know, I started noticing I was getting colds all the time. You know, every time you look around, I felt like I was getting sick. And I thought about the changes that happen with estrogen as those levels decrease. Estrogen plays a big role with helping with your immune system. And so as you're starting to lose estrogen, that could be one of the reasons why all of a sudden now you're starting to notice that you're sick more. And so maybe if there's some supplementation of those levels, you may find that you're not as sick as you've been, and or using some different supplements to help build up your immune system. So, you know, sometimes you don't have to sit there and just succumb to whatever is coming to you. If you actually reach out and talk to your provider who's knowledgeable, we can help you troubleshoot some of those things and make your life a little bit easier.
That's such a great point. I mean, I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm thinking, I had two colds this winter. I never usually get even one. And I'm sure that has something to do with it for sure. And I didn't make the connection until just now you mentioned that. So yeah, I'm in that club too. Fun times. Speaking of supplementation, so I know there's always an option for women who fall into the category where it would not impose a greater danger to them. There's menopausal hormone therapy, MHT, which used to be called HRT. So that is definitely something, it's an option to talk with a provider. I'm a huge proponent of it. I'm on it. I think it's made a world of difference for me, but I also recognize that for some women, they aren't able to use that modality. Are there any supplements that you generally recommend? I know you can't make like recommendations for all women, but are there certain supplements, whether you're on MHT or not, that you recommend to women in this phase?
Well, if we're not talking about hormones, I think that there are just a few things that you can just add to your regular regimen that can be helpful. One of the supplements that I really love the most is magnesium glycinate in particular. There's like 7 different types of magnesium out there and they all do different things. Most people are most familiar with magnesium citrate, which is what makes you go to the bathroom. But the glycinate is the one that causes a relaxation. And so taking that at night can be very helpful, particularly with replacing the magnesium that we may have lost as we're out there running and sweating. And also just getting you in a more relaxed state. So that you can recover better. We've seen that it helps a little bit with controlling blood pressure for some people who have some borderline numbers. So that's one of my favorite supplements. Probiotics are very helpful for most people, particularly runners, as we're out there battling with respiratory infections as well as vaginal infections. Vitamin D is good, even if you're out there in the sun. On average, if I check most people, they're still deficient. So adding in vitamin D and then a good multivitamin. Most of the time, we're not getting everything that we need out of our foods. So being able to have some of those staples, the B vitamins in there for the energy, the vitamin C, the zinc, the selenium to help with thyroid optimization, all of those different things can be very helpful as we're starting to age.
What are your thoughts on creatine?
So I like creatine. I think it's helpful, in particularly as you age because you're losing the muscle mass. So I think if you take it, with the right amounts and making sure that you're getting good quality brands, that it can be very helpful for you. At a time, I did use a supplement that had some creatine in it. And then one of the supplements that I have now has it in it, and it's in pill form. But I think it's very helpful especially for the loss of muscle.
Thank you. That's super helpful. And I know this is something that women talk about a lot, and that is in this phase of life, often women experience either weight gain or shifts sort of in their bodies. And I just wanted to ask you, what do you say to your patients who talk to you about that and how especially athletes should approach that and think about that?
Oh yeah. Weight gain. We talk about that all day, every day. it's known that if you are starting to go through menopause, that you can see anywhere from about 10 to 20 pound change in your weight from just menopause. And we think that some of that has to do with that imbalance between estrogen and progesterone levels, or just a total loss of it altogether, as well as losing testosterone. So, you know, testosterone is considered more of a male hormone, but women still need testosterone for muscle mass and for energy levels and all that. So when you see a sharp decline in it, once we start going through menopause, you can start noticing that your metabolism is slowing down because you're not burning as many calories because you're losing the muscle mass, and now it's translating into a weight gain. So, you know, I try to help women look at what's causing it. Is it that you're not eating the right stuff, or is it that you're not eating enough? Is it that you're stressed out and it's triggering a elevation of your cortisol levels? And so that makes it challenging for you to lose weight, or it's making you gain more weight. Is it that you've been doing the same exercise for the last 10 years and you need to add some variety in it to see some gains? So we kind of try to look at all those different aspects and tailor the approach to the woman to see how we can help them. And we do use appetite suppressants in the office when needed. Most of the time, it's not just about the appetite suppressant. Most of the time, most people can control what they're eating. It really has to do with not eating enough or eating too much of the wrong things.
I think it's also particularly hard for athletes, endurance athletes in particular, because on the one hand, we have to eat to fuel and we want to eat enough and we want to eat the right foods. But then on the other, a lot of women experience changes in their bodies. They're like, wait, this isn't the same body that I was running with 10, 20 years ago. But that doesn't mean you still can't excel in your sport. I think part of it too is acceptance and saying, okay, I look different than I used to, and that's okay because how am I performing? So mm-hmm. What advice do you have for endurance athletes who are going through this that, I would imagine you have some patients who perseverate a little bit more on it. And what advice do you have for them? And then what advice do you have in general for athletes who are going through all the symptoms of menopause?
I would say don't gyp yourself out of the food. I really would advise people to be careful with cutting the calories so much, because once you cut the calories to some astronomically low number, you're putting your body on a set point. And so if the body gets used to only eating like 800 to 1,000 calories a day, the moment you start to increase that, then it makes it hard for you not to gain weight because the body has gotten so used to that low calorie count. So I would say make sure that you focus more on the nutritional content. So, you know, am I getting enough protein? Am I getting enough carbs? Am I getting enough good fats? Forgetting about exactly how many calories it is, because most of the time, if you get the right nutrients, you're going to feel satisfied and you're not going to want to eat all the rest of the junk. If you eat way more good green and colorful vegetables, then you'll notice that, oh, maybe I don't want the sweets anymore. So I think just changing how we look at food and start looking at it as how it can fuel the body and not as like the devil, because so many people are so afraid to eat because they're so afraid that they're going to gain a couple of pounds. But you cannot have the energy that you need if you don't get your energy from the energy sources, which are going to be your carbs and your fats.
Absolutely. And without the energy, of course, that leads to injury. And we're particularly vulnerable in this phase of life to injury. And the other part of it, of course, is there's a lot of studies that show that when you cut your calories, that can lead to depression. And then that, of course, also is a whole separate spiral. So there's so much tied up into it. And I appreciate you sharing, as someone who treats patients, I'm sure, regularly, who talk to you about this. How to troubleshoot and focusing on the food and the quality of the food versus calories is absolutely the way to go.
Right.
So specifically for endurance athletes who are navigating menopause, times looking a little different than they used to. What do you have in terms of helping those women stay happy and healthy throughout their running?
So, you know, it's a little different, but I think it's still very much the same. I would say really making sure that you're not neglecting the protein and the good fats, just in general. But for myself, what I found that has been very helpful from an endurance standpoint, particularly with recovery, is the vegetables. It's amazing. You know, it's the more vegetables that I put in throughout the day, it just like I wear a whoop. And when I check the recovery score, it's like, oh, it's a great score. And I didn't even sleep well. But I remember, oh, I ate a ton of vegetables today. And the vegetable has the antioxidants in it, and it helps the body to get what it needs for recovery. And so, you know, just trying to have that well-balanced diet where you're getting all of those different food groups in, I think is going to be helpful for our athletes as we age. Not negating the fact to get the protein in. I know a lot of women are afraid to eat too much protein because they're concerned about maybe damage to the kidneys or whatever. But you really do need a good amount of protein in order to lose weight if you're trying to lose weight, and also to maintain it. And then with the carbs and the fats, you got to get the energy from somewhere. So you can't just not eat the carbs. So it's better to see, okay, what are the better carbs that I can have? So maybe I eat the brown rice. Maybe I have the sweet potato instead of the white potatoes. Maybe I'll get the broccoli and all the other colorful vegetables instead of the junk, and use that as fuel instead of eating the chips and the cakes and the cookies and things.
Great advice. Although the chips and the cakes and the cookies are good occasionally, because we also don't want to become like unhappy people with them with restrictive diets all the time, of course.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, this is all great advice. So lastly, you are an incredibly busy woman. You are clearly fitting in high level training while managing a very busy practice. What advice do you have for our listeners who are looking to run at their best, but also navigating a high pressure career?
Consistency. I would say that if just try to be consistent and try to put those things that are very important to you, the things that need to get done, do those things first. Anytime it's something that I know has to be done for the day, I put it at the top of my day, because that's when I'm more effective. I'm more efficient at what I'm doing. I'm going to be more productive. There are some people that tend to do well in the evening, but I know that that's not me. So I think if you know yourself and you know where your strengths and your weaknesses lies, you can capitalize on that. So, you know, putting that run at the beginning of the day instead of going through your entire day, going through work, tired, and then saying, oh, I don't want to go out and run. So that's what's helped me over the years. And then the other thing is whenever I feel like I really don't want to do something, that's when I try to encourage myself to do it the most, because it's usually the things that's going to be the most beneficial for me. So I did a speed workout Wednesday that I really didn't want to do, but it turned out to be one of my better ones. So I'm glad it's done. But just knowing that you can do hard things, and that if you can find a way to be consistent and prioritize them, you can get it done and still be successful at many things.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Dr. Stevens. You are just a wealth of knowledge and such a light. And I'm so excited to meet you in person. I just thank you so much for your time today, all of your wisdom, and just your positive energy. And I've no doubt our listeners are going to walk away with so many nuggets of wisdom. And if any men are still with us, thank you for listening. And hopefully you too obtain some great wisdom from Dr. Stevens, if not for you, then for the women in your life as well. So I look forward to meeting you in a few weeks in Boston, and best of luck with the rest of your training and your taper. Thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. See you soon.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryant. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others. And please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.